championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform. You guys can find all of our writing on thefootballbrainiac.com. Today we have an awesome show that I'm really excited about because we have the Quandre Diggs coming on to join us to talk about his time at Texas, his thoughts on the current team, and his time right now in the NFL. And then break down what happened against Kansas State as the Longhorns walk off to get a big win over the number 16 Kansas State Wildcats. But without further ado, let's go ahead and jump right into this interview with Quandre Diggs.
Turn your volume up, everyone.
And now on the line, you all know him. He's a lifetime Longhorn, a fan favorite, Quandre Diggs. Quandre, how are you doing, man? How is life up in Seattle?
Oh, man, it's great. Got a big win last night, so we're going to the bye week with some momentum and just excited, you know, for a new start. Great place, great organization, and, you know, I'm enjoying some off time with the family now.
Quandre, as I understand it, though, you and Darius were locker room neighbors back in Texas. Do you have any embarrassing stories about DT back in college that I could kind of parade over him forever?
I can't really think
don't,
of nothing
don't hold
off the top
back.
Of the head.
Don't hold back.
I can't think of nothing off the top of the head, but man, we got a lot of stories from college, man. DT and those guys, they kind of embraced me as soon as I got there. So, you know, I probably the funniest story probably for me, and it wasn't even with DT. It was just, remember my first workout at Texas. We went in there, went in the locker room, this is my first day, you know what I'm saying? It's not my first day on campus, but it's my first workout with the team. And, you know, we had Benny come in, and I have been working out for like 2 weeks because I was trying to get cleared to do exercises and stuff. And I just remember, you know, kind of walking in after that workout, and I couldn't even, like, my arms were so dead, I couldn't even freaking, like, open my locker for the combination of my locker. And, like, all the guys were just looking at me funny, like, yeah, this ain't high school no more, like. And man, it's just one of those things that you remember those days forever. And I know DT can attest to this, man. It was just that same day was one of the days when Calvin Howell got into it when our counselors in the locker room. And, you know, that kind of set the tone for my college career on how things were gonna go.
Hey, it's a lot of football players, man. I think if you stuck a camera in there, you got a lot of guys that are comedians, don't even know it, man. It's crazy.
No question about it.
But Q, still sticking with UT and everything, what are some of your favorite memories from UT? Start with on the field, and then if you have one off the field, can we hear that one as well?
I think on the field, I think, you know, my greatest memories and, you know, my greatest times will always just be, you know, the bonds that I built with all my teammates over the years, you know, those things always be near and dear to me because, you know, at any time, you know, I can get in touch with those guys can get in touch with me. And, you know, we can still just reminisce about the old days and the, you know, the mm-hmm. things that we did from we were 17 to 21, 22 years old, you know, learning how to be men. So, I think, you know, on the field, we weren't as good as we were supposed to be, but, you know, I think the bond that we shared was a lot closer than people, you know, on the outside think. Mm-hmm. We were very tight knit in that locker room. We had a lot of great people on that, you know, on those teams, and, you know, things just didn't work out the way they were supposed to. But, you know, I always hold those friendships near and dear. It's similar to, mm-hmm. you know, like DT can hit me up anytime. And just like, you know, he hit me up and was like, hey, you mind going on? You know, answer a few questions for me. And, you know, just the respect, the brotherhood that I have for him, you know, I'm always available to do things like that for my guys. And that's just the type of person I've always been.
For sure. Hey, ain't it crazy how different stuff look at 26, 27 than it did at 17, 18, man? It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. No question about it, man. There's no way when I was 17, 18 years old, I think I'd be, you know, somebody's dad right now. You know, There's no way, man. Just knowing the way that, you know, our mentality was in college, you know, we were all about ball, trying to get to the league. You know, we wasn't really worried about anybody else but ourselves. And, you know, now being 10 years older, it makes you realize a lot of those things that you did back in the day, you know, you should have thought about, you know, some of the consequences later on in life.
it flies by.
But, hey, Quanja, I do have a question. Keeping with your favorite times on the field, was it not beating A&M or, you know, beating Oklahoma in 2013? Were those not some of the best memories you've made as a Longhorn?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, those things always stick with me forever. You know, those will stick with me forever. You know, you can always go back and you can always watch those things on TV, you know, and you can always relive those moments. But those connections that you have in the locker room that, you know, that you don't realize until you get to the NFL or until you get out of football that you miss, you know, those connections are way more important to me than any football game that we play. You know, that's just always how I've been, man. It's always been bigger than football to me, and I've always been big on relationships.
Mm-hmm. But still going back to football real quick, going back to UT, I know you remember you played for Coach Akina, I got a ton of respect for. I've been around a lot of coaches since that time in Texas. Dwayne Akina is still the best defensive back coach I think I've ever seen. What did that guy instill in you, and how did he help prepare you, you know, for life in the NFL right now?
Man, I just think with Coach Akina, first of all, I think, you know, the respect that you have for him as a coach, as a person, goes beyond, you know, him as a football coach. I think, you know, a lot of guys, including myself, when I first got there, I think we were just so scared to mess up from messing up and getting in trouble by him, because that was the last guy that you wanted to hear, you know, getting on your tail when you mess up, because, man, he used to ride us bad. And it was one of those things where it was just like you could hear him on the sideline, you know, if you messed up. You could hear him yelling, and I could just hear that voice distinctly in my ear, you know, when you messed up. But, you know, the way he taught things and concepts, and the concepts that he taught us, those things go into the NFL now. And I just talked to Coach Kenny like 2 weeks ago, and he texted me, and he was just like, man, you're going to a special place. You're going, you know, with your head coach is a DB guy by trade. And he's like, a lot of the things that I learned coming up, you know, through football was from Pete Carroll. And, you know, it's just crazy that, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, I was learning from Coach Akina, and now I'm learning from Pete Carroll. But Pete was one of the guys that instilled those things in Coach Akina. So, you know, it's just crazy how the world works. And, you know, I just think the way that he broke things down for us really simplified it for us in that back end. And I think he'll always be a legend at the University of Texas, because, you know, he was one of the ones that got the DBU thing going, you know, even though we had DBs back in the day and things like that. But, you know, when Coach Akina got there, he had that pipeline really running.
Absolutely.
This next question comes in from a Longhorn fan. 1 Ice 9, going from Akina and the Mac Brown staff to Charlie Strong, what was that like in the locker room? What did that culture shift feel like? And what were your impressions of each staff's approach and how the team generally reacted to Charlie Strong?
Oh yeah, that's I think, and this is just my honest opinion, and you know, it's not me picking, you know, Mac Brown, Charlie Strong. I think my senior year would probably be my funnest year in college, just because, you know, the difference in, you know, how things were done around the building. You know, I think Coach Strong made the vibe where it's like, we're going to work our tail off, but at the end of the day, we're going to also have fun. And, you know, I was very blessed to have Coach Strong, very blessed to have Vance Befford, Chris Vaughn, those guys, because in that 1 year that I was there, with those guys, they taught me so much about the game of football. And, you know, those guys were more about, you know, me getting my degree than, you know, football. That's what their main thing was. You know, when I was thinking about leaving my junior year, after my junior year, those guys were just like, come back to school and get your degree. You know, that's going to last way longer than anything you can do in the NFL.
Absolutely.
That was important for me, you know, just to build that trust with those guys. And, you know, I'm not really here to compare staffs. It was just, more, you know, Coach Strong, he related to the players a lot better than Mac did at the end of his years. And, you know, I think that kind of was the shift. But, you know, not taking anything away from Coach Brown, Coach Aquina, you know, Coach Diaz, because, you know, I still keep in touch with all those guys too. But I think just my senior year, the respect that I have for Coach Strong, the way he came in and, you know, wanted to change things, and just the way he worked us, you know, he worked us, and, you know, things didn't work out the best way for him. But at the end of the day, you know, I always look at him as a father figure in my eyes.
That's awesome stuff. So transitioning more to the current team, you know, of course, while you were there and we talked about it, you know, you're a fan favorite. You always have been, always will be. And it's because you've never been afraid to speak your mind. You always, you know, say what you felt needs to be said, you know, keeping it real.
Right.
You still follow Texas pretty heavily still, right?
Oh, yeah.
You've been keeping up with them this year?
Oh, yeah. I'm in tune with everything. You know, I gotta keep my eyes on my guys, man. I got to make sure, you know, that those guys are working. And, you know, I have some things to say after the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the coaches up there, they know me. They know, you know, I don't mean any ill intent. It's just, you know, I just speak my mind, and that's just kind of how I've always been. So, you know, I keep up with them a lot.
You know, going by watching this season, you know, seeing some of the ups and downs, things like that. I know there have been a ton of injuries and stuff like that. You know, you were a guy that played cornerback, you played nickel, you've played safety, you played every position in the defensive backfield. So,
right.
In your opinion, you know, just what is your analysis of what you've seen from the defensive backs, and what advice would you give them to help finish out the season strong, you know, despite these ups and downs and things like that? What if you were a defensive back coach and these were your guys, you know, not just hypothetically, what would your advice be to them right now? What would you be telling them?
I would just tell them, you know, at the end of the day, you know, everything has gone the right way, the way we wanted at the beginning of the year. You know, everybody went in with high expectations of this back end. You know, you got Caden Stearns, freshman All-American, mm-hmm. you know, big time guy, Big 12 player, you know, guys picking him to be Big 12 player of the year. You got B.J. Foster, knowing the impact that he can make on the game. Mm-hmm. Guy that I think was very overlooked last year for some of the things that he did. You got Brandon Jones, a guy that's going to be an NFL player, no doubt in my mind, next year. And, you know, a guy that I have a ton of respect for. And then you got the corners. You know, you got the young guys. You got Jalen Green. You got Cook. You got Jamison. You know, you got those guys that when those guys came out of high school, you know, that was the highest rated freaking defensive back class dang near ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, you thinking, okay, you know, I know last year those guys didn't get a lot of reps because you had two guys that played in the NFL with Chris Boyd, and you had freaking P.J. Locke, and then you had Devontae Davis. So, you know,
that's
I know
true.
They didn't get a lot of game reps last
yep.
year. I know there's a lot of expectations coming for them, and I think that, you know, everybody, including myself, I think we put the way they said, you know, I think we put the cart before the horse or whatever they say. Mm-hmm. You know, I think everybody just kind of assume that those guys come out of high school will be ready to go in big time, you know, Big 12 college football, SEC games. We just assume that, okay, they had a year on campus, they'll mm-hmm. be ready to go. And, you know, it doesn't work like that for everybody. You know, it doesn't work like that. Those guys that can come in from day one, be a for sure starter, make those plays day in, day out, those guys are rare. You know, heck, DT, though, you know, we have John Harris had 3 or 4 years where he was just on the bench, you know,
mm-hmm.
not playing a lot.
Yeah.
Fifth year, he'd come in, he'd go for 1,000 yards receiving. You know,
mm-hmm.
it takes time for it to click for everybody. And I think, you know, as fans, myself included, you know, because I'm a fan, because I'm, you know, I don't play there. I'm an alumni, but I'm a fan. But, like, even for me, it's tough for me to you know, kind of slow the expectations down, because I always, you know, me, I came in as a freshman. I started, I played every game, and
mm-hmm.
that's just how I was. But, you know, I can't compare everybody to myself, and the fans can't compare everybody, you know, to me and, you know, the Nathan Vashes, the Quinn Jammers, the, you know, the Michael Huff, the Earl Thomas. You can't compare guys to those guys, you know, coming straight out like that, the Aaron Williams, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would just tell those guys, you know, at the end of the day, just go out there, compete. You know, just be the best players you could be, and, you know, not worry about what the outsiders are saying. You know, You just have to believe in yourself, continue to put the work in each and every day, because, you know, we all know those guys had a talent. We know they had a talent. We know they have the freaking pedigree to go do it. It's just more about, you know, just doing it on a consistent basis. And, mm-hmm. you know, my main thing for everybody in that secondary would be to tackle better. It's been a lot of missed tackles this year that's led to a lot of big plays that could have been prevented, and probably record could have been a lot different. You know, the record easily could be 7-1 or freaking 8-0. You know, if you just make tackles, get the guy down when you're supposed to, and just live to fight another day. And, you know, with the guys that were injured, you know, just try to get yourself back healthy as you can, and just go out there and play the game that you love to play, but with a healthy body, because that's the most important thing, man. I've been through that, where you try to push through a lot of injuries, and that thing, it doesn't work out like that. So you just got to get yourself mentally and physically ready to go.
Right. I think we're getting a habit. I don't know, you remember when NCAA used to exist? We used to play that in the dorm. You know, you recruit a 5-star, he comes in 80. The next year he's an 88, ready to go. I think we start, you know, thinking like that. It's like a video game, especially folks that, you know, might not have ever, you know, really played. They're human beings. It's a process that goes with it, right? So, no, I feel you on that 100%.
Right.
So, Quandre, you were talking about, you know, they need to improve their tackling. You, on the other hand, are one of the best tacklers that has come through Texas in quite a while. What did you do specifically to practice your tackling? What is it about tackling that, you know, you practice that made you so good at it?
I think, first of all, tackling is a want to. You know, that's always been my mindset. It's a want to. You want to tackle. You want to get this guy down. And at the end of the day, I look at it as a disrespect thing. You know, when I miss a tackle, I feel disrespected that this guy just beat me in a one-on-one situation. And it kind of pisses me off, you know. But also, you know, with Coach Keenan, we had the pit. And DT probably could attest to you. He wasn't even a defensive player. But everybody knew what the pit was, man. Everybody knew that when mm-hmm. Coach Keenan was like, we headed to the pit, fellas. Like, everybody knew what it was. Like, walk-ons, you know, quarterbacks, everybody knew when you get to that pit, it gets real. Yep. And, you know, that helped us work on our tackling fundamentals. It helped us, you know, instill some toughness in some of the guys. And I still remember to this day, me and Kenny Vaccaro, we would get up to the front of the line and, you know, we would do ours and then we'd go again and he'd be like, Quandre, Kenny, get out of line. Get to the back of the line. I want to see these other guys tackle. And he would put freaking Mykel Thompson and Josh Turner and Adrian Phillips and all Carrington Bynum, all the guys that like he wanted to get a reaction out of those guys, because that's the type of guy he was, you know. He was big on freaking tackling, and he was big on being a physical secondary, and that's just kind of what he lived by, you know. We would have to take on pulling guards, you know. We took on pulling guards, and that was something that he expected us to do. He didn't expect us to turn those things down. So I think it's just a mentality, really.
So, Quandre, last question about the current team. What do you think is the easy thing that Texas could do to improve the defense overall within the last few games of this season and into the next one?
I think this past weekend they played good. You know, I think they played really well. But a lot of that had to do with guys being back healthy. Coach Orlando having his guys that, you know, that he can depend on each and every week that played a lot of football for him. I think that definitely helped because, you know, when you got, like I say, Caden Stearns, when you got him healthy, you got B.J. Foster healthy, you got Brandon Jones, those are guys that are leaders on this team. And it's hard to win football games without having leaders on your team out there playing. And, you know, I learned that the hard way. When Jordan Hicks was hurt, we wasn't really a good defense. But every time Jordan Hicks was healthy, we were a really good defense. And, you know, I think, you know, he has his guys, and I think that'll help. You know, this guy didn't just forget how to coach defense. I don't think he just forgot how to coach defense in 8 months. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, I think getting his guys back healthy, everybody just, you know, tuning in, just getting the pressure off their back. I think, you know, everybody was so freaking pumped for that LSU game that some of the fundamental things they forgot about, instead of just going back to being their self, you know, taking it each week, each and every week, you know, taking a challenge. And, you know, I hope these guys just go out this week, you know, and build off a good week that they just had last week.
Amen. So transitioning on to the NFL now. All right, transitioning. All the Texas fans listening to this, that's going to listen to this podcast, many Texas fans in general, they view the Seattle Seahawks as an extension of the Longhorns, right? Due to so many players that they have there. You know, what's it like playing up there with a guys like Puna Ford and Michael Dixon?
Man, it's dope, man. It's dope just to be around guys that, you know, the guys that I know, first of all, guys that I have a lot of respect for. You know, Puna was there my senior year in college. I didn't get to play with Mike, but every time I was training, Mike was always out there kicking the freaking ball, you know, trying to get better and work on his craft. And I've always had a lot of respect for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Puna the same way, when he came in, he had a mentality that, you know, he knew he wasn't the biggest guy. And we kind of related, you know, me and him related, because I knew I wasn't the biggest guy, but Puna had an aggression, kind of aggression to him that I liked. And I knew his mindset was just to go out and work and be the best player he could be. So it's fun to have guys that you know, guys that you respect. And, you know, guys that just work their tail off each and every day.
So, Quandre, during your time on the football field, you collected a number of accolades on all levels. I mean, from being the top-rated cornerback, numerous Big 12 honors, and now, you know, two Pro Bowls. However, what do you feel like is your greatest accomplishment away from the football field on top of having a family?
My greatest accomplishment, man, is just being a father. I said
aside from being a fan, you know, getting a family. That's the easy route, Quandre. You're taking the easy route here.
I can't say when it's fresh. When it's fresh, man, that's all you can think about. I'm trying to tell you.
That's it, man. That's all I can really think about. But you know, outside of it, I think my biggest accomplishment is just, you know, always earning the respect of everybody that I play with. You know, that's always been big for me. You know, I'm not big into the awards and, you know, all those type of things. I'm not a flashy guy. I'm a guy that have a big personality that, you know, just like to have fun with his guys. And when I can earn the respect of the guys in the locker room, that's the most important thing for me, because those guys know at the end of the day, I'm going to go give, you know, everything that I have. I'm going to go out there, work my tail off. And, you know, I like to have fun. So when you can earn the respect and you can make a lot of people laugh and, you know, you can keep guys loose and things like that. That's very important to me. And, you know, this past year when I was in Detroit, I was voted the team captain. And, you know, that's just kind of an extension of some of the things I just said, just earning the respect of those guys in the locker room and just being a, you know, a guy that can keep guys loose around there. And, you know, I think that's always been important to me.
Kind of an off topic question here, because you were talking about making people laugh. Who has been the best trash talker you've gone up against or you've played with in your career?
Trash talker? Guys really don't talk trash to me. That's
hey, whoa, now. Hey, you remember Keenan Allen who was playing Kyle?
Oh, yeah, I remember Keenan, but
hey, I think he got you mixed up with Carrington because he was yelling at Carrington the whole rest of the game.
Had to be. Oh, me and Keenan, we did what's that? Because I told him I was gonna blast him if he'd have caught this pass, and we kind of got into it. Then he got into it with Carrington, but like I said, guys don't really talk trash to me, because it might look like I'm talking to people, but most of the time I'm talking to myself on the field. I'm trying to get myself going. So,
yeah,
you know, guys don't really talk as much trash to me. You know, the only guy, you know, to really talk trash to me is the NFL. Ooh, was freaking me and Cam Newton got into it my third year in the league. We got into it a little bit.
Cam Newton gets into it with everybody.
Right. And like, I had nothing against Cam, but it was just like, I'm out here competing the same way you competing. So, you know, we kind of got into it, but you know, it wasn't nothing serious. Freaking Deshaun Kaiser, me and him got into it. I knocked him out the game. You know, man, that's why, you know, I just try, and my teammates know it. You know, when people talk trash to me, it just kind of makes my game go to a different level. And, you know, I just really be chilling out there, man. I just be chilling, playing my game. And, you know, you say something that I don't like, then, you know, I get offended by it. And, you know, I try to go handle it.
I just remember Carrington was my roommate. I was like, hey, man, why was Keenan Allen so mad at you? He was like, dog, I have no freaking idea. I think he thought I was conjuring or something. It was hilarious, man. But last question, and we're going to let you get out of here. Knowing everything that you know now, is there anything that you would do differently? And if so, if not, well, go ahead and answer that first. Knowing what you know now, is there anything that you would do differently?
For sure. I think the main thing that I would do differently is, you know, after my freshman year, I wish I would have, first of all, worked harder going into that sophomore year.
In college?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Wish I would have worked harder going into that sophomore year. And I wish that, and I wasn't saying I wasn't working hard, and I really was having a great spring. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that set me back was when, and you know this because you freaking rolled with me, you rolled back with me after I did it, when I dislocated my wrist, when we wasn't supposed to be doing what we was doing. Now, I dislocated my wrist.
That's supposed to be your answer at the beginning of the interview, Quandre. Come on, man.
Did it involve a low basketball hoop?
Yeah, man. You know, I held on to that story for the longest and told, you know, I had a whole excuse about how I did it. And, you know, none of the coaches believed it, but I had to hold on to that, man. But, yeah, man, I wish I would have never, you know, went out there and messed up my wrist, because I think I probably would have had a better sophomore year than I had my freshman year, because the groove that I was in that whole spring football and off season was crazy. I was playing at a different level. The game was really slowing down for me, and me having to take those 3 or 4 months off, I think it really had, you know, it kind of hurt me a little bit.
And lastly, like, you know, things are changing, times are changing. I'm a high school football coach. I'm back in DeSoto. I'm surrounded by a ton of talented kids, right? But we've got this new era going. You were a guy that hooped, you know, AAU basketball, how those coaches, you know, tell you what you want to hear, let you do whatever, right? So now with football, they're trying to do, it's a similar kind of deal. They're treating the 7-on-7. It looks just like AAU basketball. And the battle that we're fighting right now, and it's what I don't understand, because out here where I'm at, we got a lot of talented kids who have professional, you know, uncles or dads or whatever. In your case, you had your big brother to look up to, right? And that drove you. But a lot of the kids today, they're so used to getting their butts kissed that they just want to show up on game day and get everything handed to them, because that's what they're used to when it comes to getting it from the outside with these other guys. If we were at the Under Armour All-American game, you're in the room with all those kids right now, what would be your message to them about what it truly takes?
No question. I think, you know, my advice to them would be don't take anything for granted. Never take it for granted, because at the end of the day, it all could be taken away from you. Just knowing my 17-year-old self, I had plans to go in and go into Texas and start as a true freshman. You know, that was my plan. So my idea was I was going to work my tail off to make that happen. I had a goal. No matter how undersized I was, I knew that my whole goal was to go out, play big time football. And I remember coming in and telling AP and Carrington, I was just like, look, bro, it was no disrespect to them. Like, it was no disrespect to them. And I told them, I was just like, look, I ain't come here just to play special teams. Like, I came here to start. You know, I'm fine. I'm cool. You know, we have a 3-man rotation, all that. Like, but I came here to play. Like, I ain't come here just to play special teams like some of these other guys. Like, I'm not here for, you know, just the accomplishment to be a Texas football player. I'm here to freaking go to the league. My goal was to come in, go 3 and out, go 3 years and done, and get to the league. That was my whole goal when I got to Texas, you know. And, you know, I live by that, but I worked my tail off to you know, put myself in those situations.
And that's the thing. Yeah, you stayed 4 years. You ended up going, was it the 5th or the 6th round? Something like that. You still got drafted. But you were aiming for the stars, right? And you still landed on the moon.
Right. Right. And that's what it is. You know, I always set high goals. You know, I set high goals. And, you know, if I was, like you say, if I was at the Under Armour All-American game, I could tell those guys, you know, I've been there. I've been there with Jadeveon Clowney, who's my teammate now. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been there with Ron Shazier. I've been there with, you know, Ha-Ha Clinton Diggs, freaking Braxton Miller, all those guys, you know, where I've already lived in those days. I've done it. But, you know, it was probably what we had, maybe 80, 90 guys on the roster, and what, 15 of us in the league right now?
Yeah.
Maybe 15.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, at the end of the day, you know, yeah, you might be an Under Armour All-American, but that don't guarantee you anything. That don't guarantee you anything at all, because I know guys that were five-star guys there that at home trying to get back in the league or trying to get to the league. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, just because you're Under Armour All-American, that means nothing.
They're trying to put the work in now when it should have been done back then at the time.
Right. Right. So, you know what I'm saying? If there's anything, put the work in early. So later on, you still got to put the work in, but you put the work in early, it gives yourself a better opportunity, you know, for later on in your career.
Gives you that foot up. But hey, Quandre, thank you so much for coming on, man. It was awesome having you on. Anything you want to tell Longhorn fans before you get out of here?
Oh, just want to tell them, you know, just stick with the guys, man. Stick with the team. Know that, you know, those guys are going out each and every week fighting their tail off. You know, I respect everybody's opinions. You know, I have an opinion myself, but at the end of the day, we're not in that locker room. You know, we're on the outside looking in. So we never know what's going on in that locker room. We never know, you know, what's being coached. We never know, you know, what those players are going through outside of football. So, you know, just be patient. I know this is the year that everybody thought, you know, we had an opportunity to win the Big 12 and maybe sneak into the playoffs. But, you know, at the end of the year, I mean, at the end of the day, still got a lot of football to be played. And, you know, those guys still got an opportunity to go to the Big 12 championship. And, heck, we play at Oklahoma again, then you get a shot at beating Oklahoma. And, you know, you never know where you go from there.
Q, that's awesome stuff, dog. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, thank you again, Quandre. It was awesome having you on.
No doubt. Appreciate y'all for having me.
All right, man. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Yes, sir.
Again, man, great to have Quandre Diggs on the show.
That was awesome.
It was awesome. I am a huge fan of Quandre Diggs. I have been ever since I saw him on the very first play of the Kansas State game his freshman year, absolutely demolish the wide receiver. One of the best plays I've ever seen.
I should have asked. I forgot to ask him about which one was better, that hit or the hit on Mahomes.
Ooh, that's a good question.
I forgot.
We'll have to get him back on. We'll have to get him back on.
With him in the future.
That was pretty awesome. But let's go ahead and get talking about what just happened against Kansas State. Darius, what are your overall thoughts on the win against Kansas State? What does it mean for this program?
No, I thought it was a great team win to come from behind in a football game. That takes a lot of people doing their job and being on the same page. So to see Texas pull out that win, even though they had the home crowd behind them, to pull out a win at home against a team that was ranked number 16 in the country, I thought that was a heck of a job, especially with all the turmoil surrounding the program the last few weeks. That was a big one.
Right. With everything that's going on in the locker room, for certain position groups to have the ability to turn around, big props to those players, big props to the coaches and staff as well. But there are a few things in that game. While it was a great game, there are a few things that were a little bit troubling, Darius. For one, the penalties. Let's get into that, because that's kind of been a consistent issue with the Longhorns here, is the penalties. They're 95th in the nation when it comes to penalty yards. They had a few major penalties that almost cost them the game. Darius, is it a culture thing, these penalties, or is it just simple as players fixing their own game?
It's a discipline thing. So when you watch Texas play, you know, Texas seems to get called for holding at a lot of inopportune times. There's holding going on every play. You can call that whenever you want. So that's kind of tough as far as the holding penalties. But false starts, personal fouls when the ball's not coming their way, things like that. False starts is a focus issue, you know, and I think Jalen Green's hit on that wide receiver. I thought that, in my opinion, it was definitely an RPO play. The ball was handed off inside, but they were running a bubble on the outside, but it looked like he was reading number two, which was the receiver, but he never even thought to look up and check his surroundings. That's just, I think, experience or focus deal.
And even then, it can go either way on that one, because it was face mask hit. If he doesn't stay down, the wide receiver, then that's probably not called targeting.
I agree.
And there's a lot of plays that went back, you know, like you're saying, the holding, that call, Malcolm Roach's offsides. There are a bunch of plays that could have gone either way. Actually, Malcolm Roach's should have been a delay game, but anyways.
Yeah, it's just so many penalties. I mean, it could be anything, could be the cause, and just the word that gets thrown around a lot is discipline, because we talk about it with Texas all the time. Texas The defense hasn't been playing that great at all times this year. You know they've got a solid quarterback, but those penalties eventually they're gonna catch up to you. They're gonna catch up to you, and it almost cost them against Kansas State. So I think I can't think of anything or another explanation for it other than it being something that it falls on the coaches. It does. You don't see that happening with other teams in the conference. They find a way to avoid penalties. Seems like every game Texas plays, they're always more penalized than whoever they're playing. Right. And this team's not good enough to always keep overcoming that, especially with the teams they're about to face coming up.
For sure. And another thing they're not able to overcome is taking a quarter off. And it seemed that that's what happened in the first quarter. It was just a bust. And you come out of that first quarter down by 14 points. Kudos to the Longhorns and their staff for being able to overcome that. But the staff got themselves into that hole to begin with. Darius, what was in your eyes one of the main problems that caused that first half just bust?
Well, speaking of bust, there was a mental bust by somebody defensively. I have a sneaky suspicion that it was the linebacker, Deli, that didn't go with the back. But you saw there was a miscommunication somewhere along the lines there. On the other touchdown, I think it was a corner route, you know, to the wide receiver. Brandon Jones, a senior, a guy that you expect to be able to depend on, was a step late. Now, don't get it wrong. Those corner routes are tough to defend when you're inside leveraged. But it was a situation where Kansas State looked like they came out hot. They were ready to go. It looked like they were ready to blow Texas out in their own stadium. And I don't know if that was a focus thing. I just think, you know, it's football. You know, football reminds me. We're always talking about it. Coming up, it's a lot like life. You know, you're gonna screw up. Things are gonna look bad at times, and you know they can change in the blink of an eye. You just can't get too high. You can't get too low. To piggyback off you says, kudos to the staff and to the team for staying even keeled and responding. But football, it's football sometimes, man. Sometimes you're going to get down. But it's how you respond that matters.
Right. But the staff also didn't put the players in the correct spot, especially the defense. It was interesting that what you saw between the first and the second halves with Todd Orlando. It was a stark contrast in how he called the game. The first half, the cornerbacks were way off the wide receivers, and the delayed blitzes were a huge part of his game plan. There were multiple delayed blitzes in that first half. None of them got home, and it was just pretty easy for Skylar Thompson to take advantage of both the delayed blitzes and the cornerbacks giving their wide receivers all the room in the world. And it wasn't just us thinking about this. It was literally everybody in the stadium and the announcers included. Throughout the entire game, the announcers are like, Texas has the superior size and speed. Why are they 10 yards off the ball?
I'm going to look at it from a different perspective. I thought, even though it was reactionary for him to back up the defensive backs, the cornerbacks, like he did, what that did was Kansas State's staff said, they're going to keep giving us this, giving us that. Kansas State's a team that wants to run the ball. Texas wasn't going to let them. They didn't let them run the ball. I think their leading rusher had like 27 yards rushing or something like that.
Right.
And what ended up happening, because Kansas State's taking what Texas is giving them, Skylar Thompson's sitting back there in the pocket. He's playing a game that they're not used to playing, that they're not comfortable playing. And I think that played a part. Texas getting back in the game, because yes, Kansas State's picking up yardage. Skylar Thompson matched his career high or passed his career high in the first half, but Kansas State wasn't playing Kansas State football offensively. And I think in a way, maybe not intentionally, but it ended up working in the Longhorns' favor, because they seemed to never get in the rhythm. They were never comfortable when they came out doing that. They ended up getting a touchdown on a kickoff return. I think after that, other than that, Kansas State was shut down. So I think it, in a way, maybe unintentionally, it helped Texas that game, because Kansas State ended up trying to be something that they are not, which is more of a spread, sling it around team.
But that started happening in the second half. Kansas State's offense was still clicking all the way through the second quarter. It was just, luckily for Longhorns, they got some key stops, and they got a, you know,
was it guys being in the right position?
They picked up a pretty, I don't know about that fumble call. That was a call that you can go either way. Texas got the benefit of the doubt there. But Skylar Thompson ended off that first half going 13 for 17 with 220 yards and two touchdowns. They were 5 for 7 on third downs. That's not really, you know, they're still clicking, and that's, they didn't, that wasn't all just the first quarter. They were still doing it through the second.
We've seen that with them before, though. We're like Oklahoma State, West Virginia. We've seen the Texas defense bend and then try to bow up in the red zone. So, I mean, I thought that was more of what we were used to seeing them do. Of course, the turnover was huge, but...
But when that really started to swing was when Todd Orlando took away the deep defensive back blitzes. No more delayed blitzes. There was two in the second half. And the two that I saw, one resulted in a first down, and the second one was where Brandon Jones came in at a delayed blitz, didn't get home, but luckily B.J. Foster was in the correct spot to knock the ball away. Otherwise, Caden Stearns is there, but it's still a pretty easy pitch and catch.
Yeah, no, if I never see another delayed blitz from a Todd Orlando team, you know, I won't have any problem with it. If his name's not DeMarvian Overshone or Juwan Mitchell or B.J. Foster, I don't really want to see him blitzing, you know?
Right. And on top of that, they made sure that they were up on these wide receivers. They put the defensive backs up on the wide receivers. Every single time that Kansas State was able to complete a pass was when Texas had their defensive backs 10 yards back. But the times that Jalen Green got a pass breakup, the time that Deshaun Jameson got that very key pass breakup, the time where Anthony Cook not only got his pass breakup, but also helped out in the sack and helped out in the run game, they were all up on the line of scrimmage.
Right. I mean, I obviously he gained more confidence in the guys as the game went on. But we talked about it a little bit before the show. Kansas State was probably the least athletic, least explosive group of skill guys that Texas
is
going to see the rest
of
the year. Yeah, it's why they were able to do it. But I think, you know, if they give up a few big plays at Iowa State to start, you know, this week, I don't think they'll be able to get away with that quite like they did, trying to press those guys and do things like that. Because you're going to face a team coming up that's got close to similar athletes. But they were definitely able to do it against Kansas State. I agree with what you're saying. Probably should have started off the game. Oh, they did start the game that way, but he probably overreacted backing those guys up like that. I agree with you 1,000%.
Right, yeah. But like we said, towards the end of that second half, the defense came together. They really actually put together a pretty good showing, only allowing 3 points on defense after that first quarter meltdown. Because at the end of the first half, Kansas State kind of played right in the Texas' hands, ran on first down. They did the majority of the times in the first half, but towards the second half, they really forced the run. And it wasn't a great running game. They gave the linebackers some pretty easy reads with not much play action, which really played into Juwan Mitchell's hands. Because Juwan Mitchell, while he is a missile, he's a guy who, if you are able to make it so that his first read is wrong, he'll get lost very easily. But they didn't do that. So Juwan Mitchell looked like a savage out there because he played very well.
I mean, Kansas State does some, you know, still does some pro style stuff with a fullback, things like that. I mentioned it in the write up of the game. If you get a chance, if anybody's listening, if you got DVR, well, if you go to the third quarter, I think around the 13-minute mark, 12-minute, 30-second mark, Juwan Mitchell comes in and fills on that fullback. He rocked him. I think if I watched the rest, right, if I go back and look at that again, I bet you that guy wasn't coming through those holes the same way trying to lead block as well. Mitchell brings an attitude to this defense. I want to be the president of the Juwan Mitchell fan club. I'm a big fan of the guy. And you know, just thinking about it too, he played JUCO ball last year in the state of Kansas. He knows all about Kansas State. He knows what they were getting into. And I'm sure maybe he has something to prove there. But no, Texas has some attitude out there, and it was definitely rejuvenating to see guys out there like Foster, like Stearns, like Green. And it made everybody else look better.
And it was good for the linebackers as well in the second half that they stopped using so many deep defensive back blitzes, because they started mainly using blitzes from the linebacker position, and that is good for Juwan Mitchell. He's not having to think in pass coverage. He's going forward. And
yeah, you don't want Mitchell or Adeye going backwards.
Yeah, exactly. And if they didn't get home in their blitzes, that created one-on-one matchups for the defensive line, who are absolutely killing it all game long. I'm going to throw Joseph Osai in that defensive line as well, because, I mean, they were just bullying that offensive line all game long, 51 rushing yards in total. Like we were talking about in the show prior, the preview, the team that won the edge would win this game, and Texas won the edge, clearly.
Yeah, there was a point in that first half where it looked like Kansas State's O-line was getting the rhythm going. They were starting to impose their will a little bit. But then that turnover came, and I think that kind of changed everything. They got the defense off the field because Kansas State was putting a long drive together. I think the offense went down and scored. New game, game's on. Everybody's hitting reset in their minds. They feel like we got a chance in this one because, you know, if the defense goes down 21-0, 28-0, you know, just human nature. Those guys aren't running as hard to the ball as they would be.
No, not at all.
A closer game, right. So for them to force a turnover and then see the offense respond, I think that was a positive. Got some morale going, some excitement going on that sideline. And like you said, the defensive line whooped some butt, especially in that second half. And if those guys can play like that the rest of the year, Texas got a real good chance against anybody left
right.
on their schedule.
And what really actually helped out the defensive line was getting that fourth guy up there. He wasn't always on the line. Joseph Osai or whoever else was out there didn't always have their hand in the ground. But having that guy immediately right there helped the offensive line, helped the defensive line in their responsibilities and opening up the holes for the other linebackers or for themselves and stopping that run immediately. So that was a huge positive, was using Joseph Osai really the way he should be used, which is as a guy who was going downhill in the pass rush. He was a monster in the pass rush. You know, he's good going backwards, but he is phenomenal going forward.
Yeah, no, it was definitely encouraging. We saw Texas use a four-down front at points earlier on in this year, and it seemed like they went away from it. Hopefully it's something that we see more of now as the season goes along because they had so much success with it against K-State. I think that's the best thing for them. These guys have been doing it a lot longer than I have, a lot longer than we have, but some stuff just seems obvious, you know?
Right.
Some stuff seems obvious. I'm glad he made that change when he did.
Right. And the defensive backs also had a pretty good game. But, you know, actually here, I want to – let's go dip right back into the bad real fast because those delayed blitzes, that I was, now I'm thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Delayed blitzes are good at times, but the problem is that they never come in a straight line. For the defensive backs.
They're looping.
They're looping. And it's the problem is there's two guys always hitting the same hole. There's never a vacated hole there. So these defensive backs are having to slow down and curve around the guys who are also hitting the same hole, which slows down their progression to the quarterback. It's the quarterback is able to react quicker and better, and it takes away the entire point of having a delayed blitz.
Yeah, that's a lot of wasted movement. I wonder if it's practice, you know, so going through a week, you know, you have your scout team O, scout team D. You always have the perfect called on offense for whatever the defense is in. You can set them up. Same thing for the defense. You have the offense running what you think is going to be their plays and stuff like that. I think Texas may practice it a certain way and expect it to hit a certain way, but every time the game comes, it's a little bit different, and it leads to those false steps by those guys that are blitzing. And it leads to those zones getting tore up. I think it's a way that they prepare. I think it's a way that they practice it that needs to be tweaked. But like we said, you know, 10, 15 minutes ago, if we never see another deep defensive back blitz, hey, that's perfectly fine. You know, bring a corner from the boundary, that's cool, you know, right. Whatever. But all that blitzing a guy from 12 yards deep, you got to have a really special guy to be able to do that. Right. And Texas doesn't really have that guy.
Nope. No, they don't. And
not many people do.
No. So let's go ahead and take a look at the offense here, because the offense also had a pretty difficult first quarter. Also, they didn't get the ball a lot from Kansas State, only touching the ball 11 times throughout the game. But the offense did have a little bit of trouble in the first quarter, and then coming out of the second quarter kind of got their rhythm back. And really, it started with the run game taking off, right?
Right. Keontae Ingram, I think, had a career high, 139 yards on just 16 carries. To see Keontae Ingram average 8.7 yards a carry, man, I wasn't sure I would see that. I was going to see that this year, especially watching the first two or three games. Of course, he also added two touchdowns to that. So Ingram's gone over 100 yards three times now this season. His 34-yarder that he took to the house on the opening drive of the second half. We talked about Brandon Jones' fumble changing the game. When Keontae finished that 34-yard run, I don't think I've ever seen him finish a run, like take it all the way. He finished that run. I think that gave everybody on the sideline, like, okay, all right, we're going to go ahead and do this. We're going to put these guys down. And, you know, there was a time where I questioned if he was truly the team's best option, you know, being a starter. I don't really have that question anymore.
No.
And, Roschon Johnson added 37 yards to it too. So I think Texas
and the sickest hurdle I have seen in quite a while.
Yeah, if you watch that replay, he shocked the heck out of the defender. He shocked
Denzel Goolsby, who is a really, really good safety too.
Yeah, I didn't know Roschon had that in him. But the Texas, the running backs averaged, the two guys between them only touched it 21 times, but they had 176 yards. The Texas running backs both averaged over 8 yards a carry combined during this game. And if you can run the ball like that, you know, the odds are you're going to win it. So, no, big time kudos to the running backs. Big time kudos to the offensive line. If we can get into that real quick.
Yeah.
Junior Ungalau went down with a knee injury. Looked like he's going to be out for a while. Denzel Okafor came right in. His first play in, what does he do? He's a little bit late out of his stance. Kansas State's best pass rusher beats him around the edge for a sack. I'm sitting there on the couch thinking, oh, Lord, you know, here we go. But to Denzel's credit as well, I mean, he's a human being. He hadn't played that much this year. After he gave up that first sack, I thought he settled in and had a pretty good game. He was kicking some butt in the run game. Derek Kerstetter slid down the right guard with no problems. Matter of fact, that's probably Kerstetter's best position playing guard, but with what Texas has. So Texas only gave up 2 sacks on the day. I wonder, and of course we wish Junior Ungalau the best, hope he recovers and everything, but I wonder if that might not end up being a little bit of a blessing in disguise. You know, Denzel Okafor is a fourth-year guy. He's a redshirt junior. He's been around a long time. He's had three springs in the weight room, 4 summers. You know, he's not new to this. I thought Cosme was good outside of his penalties. Parker Braun didn't have his best game. But I wonder if we don't see this Texas offensive line with these 5 guys out there, if we don't see them maybe perform better than we've seen them perform the last three to four weeks.
Right, and the thing about the offensive line also performing better was they were put in a better position. First off, because of Keontae Ingram and the wonderful job he did. I mean, he was a lot more patient. He ran through arm tackles. He showed a lot of wiggle. Helped out by Roschon Johnson as well. But they were helped out by what I like to call contextual play calling, which is when one play sets up another, which sets up another, which sets up another. It doesn't look like you're throwing darts at a board. There was different plays that set up the regular plays, like their classic inside zone. They set those up with RPOs, quarterback runs.
Where did the RPO stuff come from? I feel like I hadn't seen that all year. Maybe I'm mistaken. I don't remember seeing RPO all year. When Texas was in their 11 personnel, like they love to be, when Reese Littell was in the H-back position, they were making Kansas State's linebackers were fast. 5 and 3 were 2 fast guys. They're aggressive. They want to come downhill. The first, I think, 3 times they did it, he stuck that ball in the running back's stomach. They came shooting down, bam, slant right behind them. Okay,
Oh,
my God, where has this been all year?
Right.
So then they start hesitating a little bit. Now they're a half step slower, you know, a tick a little bit slower. Uh-oh, now the center and guard, that stack is now getting to those backers. And that's when you saw Keontae Ingram breaking loose. We saw things like I got really excited because I'm like, finally Texas is doing stuff to other people that we've seen do to them. And we see Oklahoma and folks like that have so much success with. Where has that been the whole time? And I hope what I'm worried about with the RPO thing, if Texas, because they had so much success, please change the formation. Okay, don't run it out the same formation next week. Things like that. Keep the same action and just do it out of different looks. The game doesn't have to be hard.
No.
It doesn't have to be hard.
No, not at all. There wasn't a lot of different run plays in their run game. There was maybe introduced 2 different runs.
Yeah, and what happens is you make it real simple. You isolate one side of the field. You have the quarterback turn to that side. He's facing this side. He's reading that backer, okay? If that guy backs up, it's a give. He comes up, he can't be right.
Right.
He can't be right. And I don't know any way. There's no answer for that. If you have a guy, a quarterback back there that can think, that can process the game, you're borderline unstoppable, especially in college football. So
right.
I was so excited to see it.
Right. And those RPOs, the quarterback runs, the passing plays where they're pulling one side of the line where it looks like they're running an inside zone play, but it's actually a pass play. That helped with the run game. They didn't run out of more than the inside zone for Keontae Ingram or Roschon Johnson, or doing much more than Roschon Johnson's classic counter. They disguised it by running different plays that look similar, but were a different play altogether.
I'm saying I hope they do, though.
I see what you're saying.
Keep that same action.
Yeah, they only had 2 different run plays that game. They had the speed option, which Sam Ehlinger had trouble with early on in his career, but ran absolutely perfectly in this game.
Great.
And basically what I'm going to call a new take on the inside zone, which wasn't much different than what they usually do with it. It was little things like this, that where they played off their regular plays by making the defense consistently think they were running inside, then bouncing it outside with that option. Had the linebackers and the safeties in their own heads, consistently hesitant to either drop back or to go forward, allowed, you know, with the RPO to bring those guys up, drop it behind them to Colin Johnson for a first down, or bring them up and there's nobody in the middle of the field covering Devin Duvernay, right?
Yep.
And once that run game became an issue, the safeties came up, the passing game was wide open.
Yeah, Texas had Kansas State's defenders thinking instead of reacting, because reacting was getting them in trouble. Whereas the past few weeks, Texas has been doing it to their own players, having them thinking instead of reacting, just from, you know, too much stuff going on, too much turmoil.
Right.
But you brought up that option, that little quick speed option. I want to shout out to John Burt, Malcolm Epps. They didn't do much in the passing game. Those guys blocked their butts off. They blocked their butts off for those guys in the open field and in space. Of course, the senior duo, Duvernay and Colin Johnson, they did what they always do. They both combined for 220 yards. They had 110 apiece on 16 receptions combined and a score. And then Brendan Eagles came back from his little suspension, had two catches for 21 yards, including a chain moving 14-yard grab. So I thought it was a solid – everybody did their part on Saturday. And no, Jake Smith only played one series, but I feel like he earned that with his play the last 2 weeks. He deserved to sit this weekend. I don't know about you, but I'm at the point where, you know, folks on the board are asking about, hey, is he going to transfer or whatever? I mean, how long as a coaching staff can you worry about pacifying guys, okay? You have to hold guys accountable. And if guys can't handle being held accountable, you know, if all you're trying to do is get them better, that's part of growing up. So if they want to leave, then at some point you got to cut bait. You can't worry about it. You got to have guys here that are mature and want to be there. So you got to play the best guys and the guys that have earned it.
Still, I think if he's patient and waits, he'll be the guy next year for sure.
I hope so. I hope so.
I think that's going to do it for us here. That has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, where can we find you?
Y'all can find me on Twitter, DTERRELL05. Shoot me a message. Shoot me a DM. Holler at me. Anything on your mind, I'll respond. I'm here all day. Let's chop it up.
And you guys can find us and our other work on thefootballbrainiacs.com. That's where you guys can find our writing and our other episodes on The Hornscast. At The Hornscast on any podcasting platform you can find. On that note, thank y'all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Peace.